Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us for the afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 17th of November, and this is Game On. Coming up today, we'll pick through the FAI's report on grassroots football as well as discuss the latest big win for one of our international teams.
Oh, this has come through to O'Neill. Final chance for Ireland. It's O'Neill. He's done it! Ollie O'Neill! To secure the victory that Ireland so richly deserve.
Oh, I'm delighted, George. I'm absolutely delighted. No more than deserved. They've been absolutely terrific.
Well, if Alan Cawley is delighted, we are delighted too. And we'll have more on that shortly with David Snaid here in studio. He'll preview the last round of matches in the Eritrecity League Premier Division. We'll also head west as Athenry Camogie Club aim to be the first to build, buy and develop their own facility. More on that from local legend Joe Rabbit.
Players calling for it. One of them is Joe McGrath. Back to Joe Cooney. Bobby Ryan not having any of it, but it's the other Joe Rabbit, coming stylishly forward to take another point.
We'll also hear from the Irish rugby camp as Argentina await, and I'll speak to Cricket Ireland CEO after an eventful few days on and off the field.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, David Snaid is with me in studio. And David, we are going to start once again on Stephen Kenny's contract today. It's Paddy Bonner who was out speaking to the media, and he has given his opinion on whether or not Stephen Kenny should get a new contract. You were at the press conference. How did it all play out? And what does Paddy Bonner think?
Well, first of all, it was a bit different than around this time last week when we were in the Aviva Stadium, just in anticipation of a World Cup qualifier against Portugal and having that feeling of looking forward to a big match, and then seeing an Ireland team deliver a very impressive performance and then follow it up and back it up with a win away in Luxembourg. That seemed to have brought us to a situation where it seemed almost as if the topic for discussion was almost over, really, because it seemed obvious that maybe something would happen to Stephen Kenny from the nadir of what had happened at home to Luxembourg back in March, the draw at home to Azerbaijan, and just the sense of despondency that was around the place, how he had managed to reinvigorate the campaign. And even though Ireland still didn't qualify or even get near a playoff spot and were well off the pace of Portugal and Serbia in the end, just a manner of how the campaign had turned around. But I think it's because of that these questions still happen, because of how it's very understandable, it's justifiably so too, that those performances and results at the beginning of the campaign are still hard to shake. It's very hard to kind of forget the disappointment that was felt and just the manner of those performances. But when you see how things had evolved and how things had developed over the course of the campaign, and the sense that seems to be around the place in terms of the supporters getting behind the team and the players backing the manager, like very forcefully so, like Shane Duffy after that Portugal game coming out and going to bat for his manager, really talking about, if you can't see what's happening in front of you, you're talking about the manager not being here, then you're writing the wrong stuff and talking about the wrong stuff. So then you get to a situation today with obviously the press conference in town in Dublin City Centre earlier on today, talking about obviously the grassroots initiative and the UEFA study that being put into football for the FAI, and how it's worth like 1.8 billion euro to grassroots soccer's worth 1.8 billion euro to Irish society. And then naturally you're hearing all these slides and you're kind of going through like PowerPoint presentation fatigue. It's disappointing and it's hard to describe as anything else. But then obviously the questions come up about what's happening next with Stephen Kenny. Obviously Paddy Bonner, he's one of the members of the 12-person board. He's the chairman of the High Performance and International Unit. He's someone whose opinion will carry a lot of weight with some board members on there too. And I would say his best way of describing it would be almost non-committal. He did say he was encouraged by how the campaign had finished and what the confidence that seems to have been renewed around the place, but that also how a review will take place. And listen, if we're kind of talking about where the FAI are at and where the FAI are coming from, It wasn't too long before long ago where there was members of that FAI board in Bushwell's Hotel where Paddy Bonner was speaking today about going into an Oireachtas committee, and it was a very, very different kind of FAI. It does seem to be a case of this, they're trying to stress that this isn't a one-man show where one person's going to decide what happens for the manager's fate, and at a whim that it's going to be decided everyone's going to have a voice. That seemed to be what Paddy Bonner was stressing, which I think, listen, that's only right. Like, 12 voices in the FAI board, there was 50 odd thousand who seemed to make their voices heard when they played Portugal, a few more who were there when Ireland travelled to Luxembourg, and I'm sure there's, even Liam Brady was talking about having a conversation about a Dublin taxi man, so I'm sure every taxi man in Dublin has an opinion on this, but I think it does seem to be the case that the opinions that carry the most weight are those 12 FAI board members, and it's going to be the end of this month, maybe the 29th of November, where they will sit down and decide what to do next.
Okay, well, let's hear some of what Paddy Bonner had to say about Stephen Kenny.
That decision will be made eventually, and I think everybody knows that. In the next board meeting, we're going to have a review, probably, of the World Cup and this entirety, and that'll be good for all of us around the board. All of us will give our opinion on that. So then Stephen's contract will be dealt with, absolutely.
And have you been encouraged by recent performances?
Yeah. I think we've all been encouraged. As I say, it's a progression. We've all been encouraged in what's happened, absolutely.
So that was Paddy Bonner talking to Tony O'Donoghue a little bit later on. So you've been around situations like this anyway, as in press conferences when people are being pushed on things and they don't say a lot. Just given what you heard from Paddy Bonner today and also the significance of his role on that board, what do you take away from that?
The main thing I kind of took away from earlier on this afternoon will be, it seems very much a case of that it's not a one-man show. Like, we've kind of been in a situation with the FAI, the situation where they're in now, where it was very clear kind of who was running the board, who was making the decisions and who was able to influence people. You did get the sense from Paddy Bonner when he was speaking, and he spoke a lot in a bit more depth to the daily newspapers afterwards, which obviously will be coming out later on tonight and then tomorrow, and he kind of was able to expand a little bit more on that. But the gist more so would be that this isn't a situation whereby one man has an opinion and will forcefully ram it down everyone's throats and get what he wants. I don't think that's the case here. It is a case of the FAI board and dealing with this as grown-ups, dealing with this as how a professional organisation should do. Look at what happened in the campaign, what went wrong, what went right, what was the success, what might need to change, where are the signs of progress that they saw, and if as a whole they can come to a unanimous decision, which would be, you would imagine it's going to have to be the case, or have people on board to see what happens next, well then that's what needs to happen. And it just seems as if that's how any organisation should work, where they work in unison, they work in tandem, that it's not one person taking the lead and then working top down.
Is it fair to say then a lot will depend then on what their barometer for success is? Because what we think as success, which would be the performances towards the end of the campaign, the fact that he's brought so many young players through and he dealt with everything that was thrown at him along the way as well, like, for a lot of people that is success, but that might not be the case for the board, because ultimately he didn't reach that major tournament.
Yeah, and I was actually, again, just thinking about this, and I kind of even came back to the conversation only a few weeks ago with Noel Mooney when he was on, who's now obviously with the chief executive with Wales. And he made a very valid point when he was like talking to somebody from all over the phone. He was just saying that at senior level, it is about results. It is about qualifying for tournaments. That's what drives revenues. That's what obviously will help with income. And even with the stuff here with the grassroots, it is a trickle down in terms of being able to sustain an association. And when you see where the FAI are at, in terms of obviously needing that government bailout after what happened, it does depend on what is success. And if they're coming from the point of view of Stephen Kenny had been told his remit was to qualify for the World Cup, well then it's clear you won't get a new contract. But as Stephen Kenny even expressed himself and spoke about, for him it was about working towards the next campaign, the Nations League campaign, and then into the Euro qualifiers, which aren't going to be until 2023 essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got all year next year of Nations League, so I think for people, I think
initially though that wasn't the case.
Yeah, well, see,
when
this
you think
is
about the press conferences and the messages coming from Stephen Kenny at the start. It was that we had realistic chances of going to Qatar, and then halfway through that started to change, and we started looking past the World Cup and then on to the Euros.
But that's it, 100%. And you also get the sense. I think also get the sense that maybe there were. You can't look at it like obviously you had to. There had to be an injection of youth. There had to be an injection of new faces in the squad. But maybe how it was managed at the start with the new style of play and the amount of new faces, it's clear that just it was too much too soon at the beginning, but then it was kind of needed a little bit to get that bloody nose. Now I think nobody was expecting the nose to almost be a knockout blow by getting knocked out by, well, getting beaten by Luxembourg, drawn at home to Azerbaijan. No one would have envisaged such poor results, and like it's easy to say if buts and maybes now, but if things hadn't been so bad and been able to finish the campaign as they had, it could have looked a lot rosier, but that's not what happened. So if you're looking at the facts, the first half of the campaign in terms of results was an absolute disaster. It was, there's no other way of describing it. And yet the players who would have been brought through, if it wasn't for those experience that they had then, would what's happened now have been capable? Can you have one without the other? And if you're looking into the next campaign, is something like this needed? Just that little bit of short-term pain. Listen, everyone would have wanted to be getting to the World Cup. Of course, it's been 20 years since Ireland have been there, but then that in itself tells a tale. So, like, yeah, we've been in playoffs and we've been around a boat. Like, the last playoff, we got hockeyed 5-1 by Denmark. Like, there was a lot of stuff coming out afterwards saying that Ireland had always been competitive and Ireland have always been in with a chance. And yeah, sometimes people talking about, people writing about how it was almost as if that Denmark defeat was almost washed over, that Ireland were unlucky. But they got to a stage where they just, because of years and years of what else, other stuff that's happened and the neglect of what's happened, but when it came to it, the team was getting too old and it wasn't capable of actually challenging. Now we go back to it. What is seen as success? What do the FAI bar see as success in this campaign? And I would say that overall, in terms of if it was a case of getting to the playoffs or getting to the World Cup, clearly it hasn't been a success, because that's not what happened. But you speak to the people who were leaving that stadium last Thursday against Portugal, and the away fans who travelled, there's no one there feeling a sense of despondency. There's no one there thinking, what's happening? Where are we going? Anyone looking at what's happening can see what's trying to materialise. And the next campaign, the Nations League campaign, which Stephen Kenny has already highlighted and said that he wants to win, he set his stall out. The next Euros campaign, the demands are going to be an awful lot different, because the time for throwing in a load of young fellas, that's gone, that's happened. They've been blooded. The sense now is, can they actually gel even further? Can they be competitive? Can they be a team who can go away to Portugal, be winning 1-0 and hold on, or maybe get that draw? Can they go to a Serbia and not lose 3-2? Can they nick a home win against the Serbia and gradually, like we've seen with Wales, like we've seen with Scotland, build? And these building blocks have needed to be put in place, and it's beginning to seem a bit stable now under Stephen Kenny. So that's, I think they're the kind of parameters where the board will need to be looking at as a whole.
And, you know, you mentioned those young players and how many of them have come through, and I think we're all fairly confident that there is a massive importance now on the next generation coming through, which does bring us on to the fact that Ruud Doctor has to be replaced as well. The high performance director, Paddy Bonner, was the FAI technical director from 2003-2010. He was asked as well today about whether or not he would consider going back into the role, but that doesn't seem to be on his agenda now.
Yeah, he said, he mentioned that he has done his heavy lifting, which I thought was quite telling. He's obviously a bar member now. He's looking at things from a different aspect. Obviously, he had that role before. He mentioned the discussions. He brought it up himself, talking about issues that he would have been dealing with that have been long-standing in the association that are still trying to be dealt with. That director of football role, that's going to be a big one. Like, it's, you're looking at the point of view, say, of what Ruud Doctor's legacy will be. And I think it's only going to be in the next 5 to 10 years that we might see that, even a bit longer, in terms of the emergence of, say, the fact that so much power almost, or responsibility for developing young players, has been taken away from traditional schoolboy clubs around the country, and that emphasis and that focus has been put on the shoulders of League of Ireland clubs. And it's going to be a case of playing catch up. There's no other way of looking at it in terms of the facilities where Irish football is at. Like, when Damien Duff was unveiled as Shelbourne manager there a couple of weeks ago, obviously someone who would have came back to the league, played with Shamrock Rovers, then gone in as a coach with Shamrock Rovers before coaching Shelburne under-17s. And he's talking about how the training facilities that he would have with the Shelburne under-17s and even seen around with the Shelburne first team out in the AUL complex in Clonshock, they're the exact same facilities that he was using when he was a teenager, you know. So it's a long road, it really is, in terms of where Irish football needs to go, in terms of this whole the industry of what's been established with academies, with coaches who can now help kids. Like, you're talking about Brexit, the fact that kids won't be able to leave at those ages, 15, 16 years old, they're going to have to stay here. Well, what's going to be here for them? Is there going to be enough here for them in terms of education to make sure that, yeah, there's something else for them after football? But that football education and that football, the learning that they're going to have to do with the coaching that's there, is it going to be full time? Are those environments going to be full time? Like, I wrote an article for the Sunday Business Post earlier in the year when I was like speaking to different people around Irish football, and one of the points that was made to me that was very forceful was, like, shouldn't be proud that we're relying on so many volunteers to help at the moment, that it has to be people respected for the work that they do, given a living wage to be able to do it. And at the moment, that's clearly not where Irish football is at the moment. We're able to provide that, and that's what's going to have to be needed over the next number of years. Mentioned Ruth Doctor, like, obviously he will be departing, and the next person who comes in, like, the building blocks are there for that at the moment, but there's still so much work to be done.
Yeah, and that was hammered home to me earlier on the week when, you know, my kids are just starting to play football now and playing in leagues around leagues in Dublin, and you get this message in about the Christmas break, and the Christmas break goes on. These are for kids from under 8 to under 11, under 12 to under 18. And the Christmas break is from the 4th and 5th of December until the 12th and 13th of February. Like, that is how long they're not going to have fixtures. And it ultimately, I imagine it's because of facilities, that they don't have anywhere to play these games, because we don't have those
floodlights, the simple things, and that, like, that's like the grassroots issue. Like, that's obviously that feeds into the next stage, where even this talk of, say, kids, of the elite kids, of when they're going to academies, because there's kids now, academies in League of Ireland clubs at under 13, under 14 level, obviously because of what happened with COVID, with the leagues having to switch over and stuff for an underage. But, like, even the gaps in the leagues where you'd have, say, the under 19s league, the under 17s league, the 15s and 13s, it was originally set, I think that's it could be 14s for the year ahead, just to give those kids who would have missed out with COVID just a chance to catch up. But there's still gaps there. And, like, even that whole, and it's one of the issues around Ruth Doctor's kind of legacy as well, where they're talking about, like, that focus for such a young age for kids playing solely football and being in that so-called elite environment. But then the whole culture of Ireland and growing up is you play all these different sports, you have these different experiences, and that seems to have been something that, from Ruth Doctor's point of view, rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way, where he maybe didn't seem to kind of get that sense of what it is about the Irish psyche of playing these different sports too, and I know that's not necessarily a bad thing.
So let's have a very quick look at yesterday's results. So Jim Crawford's under-21s are back in contention to qualify for the 2023 Euro Championships. 1-0 win over Sweden. We heard the commentary of the goal, a last kick of the game goal. And then the under-19s are true to the elite round of qualifying for the Euro 2022 competition, a 2-0 win over Bulgaria. Like, two very positive results.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose one of them where, if you could spin it, where, like, is everything rosy in the garden of Irish football? But it's like, you have to, I think it's a big thing is not to, like, first of all, obviously the 21 still have a game, I think it's March is when they resume against Sweden, they're 4 points off, so they still have a lot to do. The Ireland under-19s for Tom Mullen, like, just great experience for those players, just all part of their journey. But, like, just the big thing with this is not just looking at it in isolation, thinking, oh, isn't this great and everything's fine. It's trying to sustain it. And ties into this conversation with Stephen Kenny and what's happened with the senior team is trying to have a sustainable Irish football model, so to speak, where, like, well, not that you take it for granted, because you should never take good results for granted, but just that there is this continued development line of players, and that it's not just sporadic moments of time for a little period here and there, and that's just trying to consistently build. And that's what is needed, and it is an approach that needs to be taken, like, across the board. And even, say, for the 19s, if you're looking at it from the point of view of 18-year-old John Kenny, a Sligo Rovers, anyone who's been to watch Sligo I say he's like the young messiah there. Like, he's their poster boy. He's their, like, their Wayne Rooney in terms of coming through the academy, a local lad, and like scoring 10 goals in the Premier Division, playing men's football, and then being in that environment, like, just embracing it. And that's what you love to see. Like, James Iwanka of St. Pat's playing centre back for that side as well, to have like other lads there from Shamrock Rovers, young lads, who's, oh, I feel terrible now, his name is escaping, but he came on, scored when the goal, when they won the league for Rovers, the young lad, the striker. And like, this is ideally what you would like to see, is these young lads getting a chance in a competitive league that will hopefully continue to develop here in Ireland, and then rising to that stage internationally. And that's what hopefully on a consistent basis needs to be done, where it is like, I hate to use the term like a factory line, because that kind of almost, it's almost demeaning in a way, because
a conveyor belt of talent is what they called it in Kilkenny when they're winning correct. All those All-Irelands.
Exactly. So if that's what we can have and just continue on that, it would just be tremendous, really.
Okay, well, we might later on the show get back to the League of Ireland and how things are going to finish up. But now we're going to take a very quick break, and then we're back chatting Camogie.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back, and we are turning our attention to Camogie now. David Snaid is with me and in studio. So we're going to get into an age-old story. Our female Gaelic Games players scratching around looking for pitches, not knowing where they're going to be playing their games from one week to the next. We've heard so many stories, constantly relying on the goodwill of the men's clubs. It's been a frustrating situation for so many players around the country, and I think especially when you think of the spotlight that has been shining on equality and the focus of so many campaigns as well for such a long time now, that it's just been difficult for people to accept the situation that many clubs find themselves in. Well, Athenry Camogie Club have decided to do something about it. They are on course to become one of the first clubs in Ireland, women's club, to build and develop their own facilities. And to tell us all about it, I'm delighted to be joined by former Galway hurler and father to two Camogie players, Sabina and Alwyn, Joe Rabbit, and Martina Malloy, who is a former player and heavily involved in all this, and also daughter of All-Ireland, two-time All-Ireland winner, PJ. You're both very, very welcome. I'm going to go to you, Martina, first, because I'm just blown away by the fact that you've been able to do this. It's been such a tough time for people in sport, and I think we're all appreciating it a lot more, but to find the motivation to go out and do something that has been so necessary is just fantastic. Just tell me how it ended up happening and how you're on course to do this.
I suppose we set ourselves a huge challenge. A group of, I suppose, our committee came together really early 2020, and you know, we looked at the lack of facilities that we had as a club, and how were we going to change that. You know, we were always so lucky to have the goodwill of our local schools and our local GA club, who always have supported us and given us pitch time that they could. But at the end of the day, as our club was growing, so was theirs. And you know, a group of people came together and we said we need to make a change. And that's, I suppose, true, you know, COVID hit then in March 2020, and that's when the famous Zoom meeting started. And bit by bit, some fantastic, you know, there was a lot of former players, and I know Joe will talk about that, you know, that came together, that have daughters playing, that, you know, looked at the opportunities they had as players. And then we, you know, we put a call out to other club members, and some fantastic underage parents came on board as well. And together we got a fantastic committee of 13 people that were, I suppose, committed to this cause. And, you know, a lot of work went into it before we could even launch this. And, you know, we needed to raise serious funds to try and, you know, take on this challenge. So that's where this Win a House and Care idea came from. And we kicked off the draw in March of this year. And we were absolutely blown away with the fantastic support we got from local Galway throughout Ireland and further afield. You know, it was fantastic. You know, I've received some lovely letters from so many people around the country that, you know, would have had my address as correspondence, just sending, you know, the purchase of ticket, but also a lovely heartfelt letter, you know, saying fair play to you for taking on this cause and leading the way. Because, you know, in our posters we have, you know, those girls in our posters and advertisements, they're wearing Athenry jerseys, but they're representing every female underage player and throughout the country, because, you know, this is something that we hope will give confidence to other clubs to take on going down the line. You know, we're leading the way, but we're only hoping that this will be a starting point for other clubs to follow.
Well, it certainly will, because you're showing people the way to do it, and that can be done as well, Martina, because so many clubs around the place will be able to relate to the stories, maybe on a smaller scale, of the inter-county teams struggling to get pitches, not knowing where they're going to be playing. And we know that that is reflected in clubs all around. And you hit on something there that's quite interesting as well. All these clubs are growing, and numbers are increasing in Gaelic games all around the country, in Camogie, in ladies football, in hurling and Gaelic football, and facilities are a huge issue, and it's something that we're talking about all the time as well, and it's only going to get harder. So the fact that you're going to show the way, lead the way, will no doubt inspire people. And Joe, just for you then, with having daughters and seeing and hearing and knowing the struggles, just to be able to see something like this come to fruition, it must be pretty special.
Yeah, look, I suppose at the moment it's very special, because we're kind of coming to an end of a very successful draw. 500 tickets left to sell out of 12,000. So, you know, we're feeling good at the moment. A lot of work done for the last maybe 12 months. But I suppose where it started for us is I bringing in my two girls in training at Athenry, and the pitch that they started training on was a pitch where there was no toilets or no dressing rooms or, you know, anything for the girls of that age. So I wanted to give them the same opportunity as my son gets. So a bunch of guys gathered together, and a lot of friends, guys that played hurling with Athenry, and PJ, of course, our manager, plus other parents, got together, and we started off this, I suppose, in January 2020. So that's when the seed was sown, and the draw then started in March of 2021. It has been a hard, we'll say, year really going through, because, you know, we'd be meeting maybe twice a week, trying to get, you know, people to do cause of action for us and things like that. You know, we got a lot of great support from people outside of Galway, outside of Athenry. You know, we got the likes of Rachel Blackmore to do a call to action for us, and we got her right in between the Cheltenham and the Grand National. So it was right on. So Marty Morrissey launched it for us. So we got a lot of help from a lot of people, and we were very thankful to all those people for that.
It's unbelievable to hear the amount of tickets you've sold. Just really, really impressive. But Martina, like, what really strikes me about this as well, like, I'm one of five daughters, I'm from 6 Mile Bridge, and, you know, we were lucky enough that the club was really inclusive and we always had somewhere to play and to train, but, like, it was always just nearly accepted that that's the way it was. And, you know, you were always asking for something and asking for the pitch, but the fact that ye have realised that it doesn't have to be that way, that ye can go and do it yourselves and make it happen for yourselves, is a moment in itself, really.
Absolutely. You know, we've always been so grateful to our local GAA club, but they can only provide us with so many slots, because their club is growing as much as we are. But we're one of the biggest Camogie clubs in Ireland now, with over 400 active members. And, you know, when you turn up to an underage training, you know, under eights, and there's 120 of them, you know, it's fantastic to see, but it's also disheartening that you can't provide the facilities that you wish you could. You know, I see my own niece now, like, you know, she's eight and she's playing with the club for the last 2 years on the same underdeveloped pitches that we're so lucky to have. You know, it's a piece of grass that the school provides to us, but I was playing on that 30 years ago. You know, when I was the same age as her, you know, and it's time that we moved on. And, you know, as we were growing, our local GAA club were growing, and, you know, time, playing time and pitch slots were always so hard to come by, but they've always provided us with fair time. But the way it is now is our numbers are just growing, because, you know, I always see it on our social media, you know, after the display of the Galway Camogie team in the All-Ireland final this year, you know, there was parents contacting us that evening going, how can I sign my child up to play? Because they were, you know, the ladies football and the Camogie, like the standard now and the skill that is displayed, you know, it's now a really enjoyable, you'd enjoy watching it as much as you would watching the men's finals. You know, the level has been, you know, lifted so high, and it's really drawn in the underage, because they're seeing these girls, they're seeing these local girls from their own club and from Galway, and playing on the main stage in Dublin, and the fantastic skill that they're displaying, and to see it on television. These kids, like, they're running out into the garden and they're picking up, you know, they're hurling like, "Mammy, where can I sign up?"
Yeah.
And, you know, that's our club, but that's every club throughout Ireland, you know, and you want to be able to field, you know, these players at every level. And, you know, not everyone's going to be a superstar, but everyone, you know, to be able to have enough playing fields for to enter as many teams as we can into competitions, let it be from an A to a B to a C, but to be able to field them and to be able to have the facilities for them to play. You know, and I suppose that's what it's all about, because, you know, I've been so lucky. Some of the friends that I took away from Camogie are my lifelong friends, and everyone will say that has ever played a sport, like, you know, it's a unique friendship, you know, and you're so lucky to come away from a sport like that. You have friends that they're friends for life, and, you know, you want to pass that on to the younger generation, that they're, you know, that they'd be fortunate enough to make the friends that we've made. I've been lucky enough to make, and other players have been lucky enough to make along the way.
And Joe, another thing as well, like, we talk about the ethos of GAA and what it's about, and having that identity and that pride, and knowing that that's your place and that's where you belong as well, is so important. So for all these young girls and old girls and everyone that will use the facility, just to even have that and to have a home is hugely important too in the sport.
Yeah, of course. Look, at as a community in Athenry and in the parish, like, we would be hoping that not alone for our Camogie girls, but for our St. Mary's, or the hurlers, we would also love to be able to, you know, give back to what they have given to us for so many years. So, like, the way we're set up at the moment is basically this is going to be a big venture, and we're hoping, as I say, that there'll be pitches there that would be a lovely thing to see, that you're driving down the road and see a game of hurling in one pitch and move down the next pitch to see a game of Camogie. So, look, at it's all about inclusion in the parish as well.
Yeah, and equality of opportunity, and it's something that we touch on so much. And Martina, it seems as well, and like I could say that definitely listening to the both of you, people are going to be sitting at home and wondering, are we doing enough for our clubs? Are we doing enough for the young girls that are there, and they might only have a tiny bit of grass, and, you know, they're doing their best to make the most of what they got? And it seems like as well, it's about time that these questions are asked, because we've seen with the rugby situation only a few months ago, when the women were forced to change beside the dumpsters. We've seen All-Ireland semi-finals and having to change venue at the last minute. And I don't think it's acceptable anymore. And when things like this are happening, it makes people realise as well that, you know, it's not acceptable, and that we shouldn't be doing more for women's sport. Not just saying, putting slogans out, but actually showing something that's tangible, like what you're doing.
Yeah, I suppose, look, one of the slogans that we used earlier on when we started off was levelling the playing field, you know, and, you know, we did ask the questions, and I suppose by doing this, we're answering them that it is possible, you know, because we kind of stood back and kind of go, what can we do? You know, there's only so much. So this was a massive challenge. And, you know, we researched it. We talked with other clubs and county boards that have done these draws. And, like, I remember talking to one county board, and, like, you know, I came away from it kind of going, oh my God, he was quite negative, as in, like, it's a lot of work and everything. I now see he wasn't being negative, he was being realistic, that it's a lot of hard work. And, like, it's, you know, I work in healthcare, and I went through a pandemic being part of this fantastic committee, but it was like having two full-time jobs. But, like, I don't regret one minute of it, because it's, you know, this isn't going to benefit me. It's, you know, it's going to benefit the future of the sport. And, you know, it's a legacy that we're hoping to leave behind, that, you know, this is going to benefit kids that aren't even born. You know, we want, it's a community, and it's just opening up the eyes for other clubs and other counties to see that this is possible if you're willing to put in the hard work, and it is hard work. But we've had such fantastic support from throughout Ireland, and you know, like, people do want to support these causes, you know, but you, if you're willing to put in the hard work and ask the questions that need to be asked, you know, where's the equality? And, you know, we're answering by, well, we're going to go and do it for ourselves, and we're going to go and purchase land in order to develop pitches and have a place to call our own. You know, it's hopefully going to give the confidence to other clubs and female identities to go and do this themselves.
Well, you have done something fantastic and will definitely be leading the way, and I hope you'll be inviting us all down for the grand opening. Sure, Marty Morrissey will probably be there anyway, so we'll have to come down. And Joe, just before we finish up, it is going to be a big year for Galway as well. A bit of change at the top. Henry Shefflin coming down. How are you all feeling about it down there?
Yeah, look, at Henry Shefflin coming down, there's a feel of excitement in Galway hurling at the moment, and like, he's coming down with Richie and Leal, and he has Damien Joyce on board as well, a guy that I hurled with, very knowledgeable guy. So look, at he's coming down to a pool of a lot of talent, and I'm sure that he'll be able to pull it all together, and the county board behind him, and get Galway up to the steps of the Hogan stand again.
No doubt, I'd say. Where can we find out about this initiative? If anybody wants to buy tickets, Martina, where do we go?
So they're available online at www.winahouseandcar.ie. They're €100, and I suppose the top prize, I don't know, we haven't even mentioned it yet, is a 3-bedroom house in the Willows in Athenry, plus an Audi A4 S-Line. So that is our number one prize. So like, it's a huge prize.
It's a good prize.
It's a great prize. And the draw is on the 18th of December. So what a Christmas and New Year present for someone, you know. And it's, as a committee, we're so excited to see, you know, it unfold and who does win, because it's a life-changing, it's a life-changing prize. Yeah. So you can purchase them online. We also have a pop-up shop every Friday in the town of Athenry for anyone who wants to purchase hard copy tickets. And that's open from 10 until 2 every Friday in Northgate Street in Athenry. And online as well, there's a contact number, a mobile number, if you wish to. People are posting payments to us as well, that we're posting out hard copy tickets. So we're making it as accessible for everyone as we can. So if anyone wants to touch base with us, email us, we can organise them to be posted. You know, they're there in the pop-up shop every Friday, and then they're also available online. So it's winahouseandcar.ie. And yeah, please God, it'll be a fantastic Christmas for someone.
Well done to everybody involved, and best of luck at it. And I'm looking forward to someday getting down there. Martina Malloy and Joe Rabbit of Athenry Camogie Club, who are developing their own facility for the women's game. Do check it out. We're going to take a very quick break, and then it's cricket.
Game on 2FM. With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are going to start with some rugby news. The South African director of rugby, Razzie Erasmus, has been banned from all rugby activities for 2 months after his misconduct charge was upheld. Announcement came from World Rugby a little bit earlier. Erasmus was found guilty of misconduct towards match officials during the series between the Springboks and the British and Irish Lions. We will be discussing this with Bernard Jackman tomorrow, and we will also be building up to the Ireland-Argentina game and also the women's game against Japan. We are now going to turn our attention to cricket. It has been a busy week for Cricket Ireland, an awful lot happening. It was announced that they are set to co-host the 2030 Men's T20 World Cup with England and Scotland. And it was also announced that they were hoping that the prospect of co-hosting this would accelerate their plans to build a dedicated cricket stadium. And to talk us through all of these, I am delighted to say that Warren Dutrum, the CEO of Cricket Ireland, is with us. Warren, it has been a busy couple of weeks for you guys.
It has been. In fact, I think it's been a busy 48 hours, actually. I was I flew out to Dubai on Thursday, attended meetings at ICC on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, watched the World Cup final Sunday evening, and Monday morning I was straight back again into the busy couple of announcements that you've seen. So yes, there's plenty going on.
There really is, and I didn't even mention, which I should have when I was introducing you, that Graeme Ford also stepped down as head coach of the men's team after 4 years. So that's another development, and that just happened a little bit earlier today. So you will be on the hunt for somebody new.
Yeah, that's right. I think, bearing in mind we've got the squad leaving for a tour of the US in the next 4 weeks, swiftly followed by some important World Cup Super League games against the West Indies. Hard on the heels of that, there's going to be the World Cup T20 qualifier in February. I think what we'll probably do is put some interim arrangements in place. We don't know whether that's going to be for a period of weeks or months. And I think we're just going to take our time before we go back into the market again on a full-time basis. So I think that's probably going to be the plan. As I said, as you pointed out, the news is relatively fresh on Graham. So we're not going to rush into anything on a full-time basis. We're going to probably put in place some interim arrangements. And I'm working through that at the moment with our performance director, Richard Holdsworth.
Okay, well, let's start then with the dedicated cricket stadium, because we have twice already in tonight's programme spoken about facilities and the need for them. We were speaking about the football facilities that were needed to help to achieve consistent performance for Ireland soccer teams, and then we were talking about Camogie facilities after that and how the women's team in Athenry are building their own facility because they're finding it so difficult with the growing numbers playing their game to get those patches of grass that they need. And I'd imagine, just given the trends around the country when it comes to sport, ye too need facilities, Warren.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's all levels of the sport, Marie. It's grassroots level, it's at provincial level where we play our sort of domestic professional cricket, and of course at international level. Cricket's sort of a relatively unique sport. It's sort of the size of its playing surface is sort of different to nearly every, probably most other sports played played in Ireland. And because of that, we require specialist facilities. And because they don't exist except in pre-existing cricket clubs, whose infrastructure is relatively sort of underdeveloped over the years, that means we have to spend hundreds of thousands of euros pretty much for all of our big major fixtures. It's a huge drain on the game, and of course it's a massive risk, bearing in mind it's been known to rain on occasion in Ireland, and the game doesn't mix too well with rain, unfortunately. So we've certainly been engaging with government over the last, well, since Malahide was developed, was pretty much in 2009-10. So in the really intervening decades since then, we've been pressing government very hard to give us that support to help us build permanent infrastructure, because it's a huge drain on the game that we would much prefer, financial-wise, was going towards players, people and programs. So I think the announcement of the T20 World Cup co-hosting that in 2030, I think it gives real momentum to that, to those discussions and to that business case as well.
Yeah, definitely puts a target there too. And are you confident that it will be delivered by then? Because it would just be, I guess, it would just make everything a little bit easier to have it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, let me be more confident and say I'd hope it'd be delivered well before then.
Brilliant.
I've already had some discussions with the government since the announcement, had some obviously in the lead up, and had a conversation with somebody in the Department of Sport yesterday, and effectively said, well, look, first of all, thank you for your support and the minister's support towards the bid, which was an important component of giving us comfort that we had a sort of a great group of stakeholders behind the bid, not least England and Scotland as well. And that, of course, you know, saying that this is going to create or sort of cast a real spotlight on our well-publicised need for international facilities. You know, if nothing else, even from a climate perspective, which is clearly in the news at the moment, simply to have to consistently build on an annual basis massive amounts of infrastructure just causes a pretty significant carbon footprint in trucks and trucks and vehicles going back and forward just to try and build our stadium. We just think it's sort of well past time now that we, as one of the major teams in the world's second largest sport, we can get 10,000 people turning up to our largest games. We can command worldwide television audiences which dwarf any of even the major sports on a worldwide basis. In fact, our two games against India in 2018 commanded the largest worldwide television audience for any event ever staged in Ireland. We think these are pretty significant stats that have a very, very significant business case, notwithstanding the fact that when we get 10,000 people, we did a piece of research with Fingal County Council in 2013 when we hosted that England game there. They estimated that it was something in the region of €1 million in local economic impact. So if you maximise that again for the significant games we've held since then, the worldwide broadcast television audience, we think we've got a very, very strong case.
Yeah, there's lots to look forward to there, and that's the positive news from the last few weeks. But it hasn't been all positive when it comes to cricket, Warren, and I think it's probably fair to say it's been quite a turbulent time for cricket in England. Yesterday we had quite a detailed discussion about Azeem Rafiq's testimony to the Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee, all about the racism that he has suffered in the sport. Just what's your reaction to see and hear what's been unfolding in English cricket?
Yeah, well, I mean, just putting aside taking off the hat as chief executive of a national governing body, just at a human level, you do nothing other than feel desperately sorry for people who are in that position, who have faced that degree of racism, who face that degree of discrimination in their lives, let alone in the in their place of work, which obviously Azeem and those like him, those players like him who would have faced that, have obviously faced up to. In fact, it's interesting, at Cricket Ireland, we secured some funding recently to carry out unconscious bias training for a number of levels, at Cricket Ireland level, at our provincial level, and at club level, which effectively is to raise the sensitivities of those like ourselves in what would be regarded as privileged positions, as like ourselves, who and it really, the purpose of those workshops was to sort of try and put into our minds the degree of challenges that those who would feel outside of our circle of privilege, and to sort of put ourselves to wear their shoes for a while, to say this is what it is like to be involved in an environment where potentially you don't feel welcome, either because of people's actions or people's words. So having had that that training only very recently, and then obviously to see what was unfolding in English cricket, it really brought it home to us how desperately awful the situation must have been for Azeem and players like him.
Yeah, because as you mentioned there, Azeem wasn't the only one, and one of the common denominators in a lot of these stories that we've been hearing over the last while is that these players, they didn't feel heard, and like that's quite a worrying trend when you think of the vastness in an association. Just from in terms of Cricket Ireland, and we're talking about being confident in things, would you be confident that, you know, if anybody felt like they needed to speak out, that ye have all the proper checks and balances in place, and that you have the processes and procedures in place as well, so that people feel that they can have a voice if they need and want to express it?
Do you know what, Marie? I can honestly put hand on heart and say, there but for the grace of God go I. ECB have, from what I understand, they have scores of policies in place, and yet it only takes the experience of one person to say, well, actually, I didn't feel listened to, I didn't feel heard. What I can say is that we do have equality, diversity and inclusion policies. We've just been through this unconscious bias training, which, by the way, isn't a one-off. It's something that is ongoing requirements of training. We've just commissioned some reports earlier on this year which sort of required us to look much more deeply to ensure that we have balance, not just in terms of ethnic diversity, but also in terms of gender diversity on our board. And we also have a specialist in diversity and inclusion on our cricket committee. So the answer is we think we're doing the right thing, but as I said, there but for the grace of God go I. It only takes one person to pick up the phone to tell us that no, they have had a horrendous situation, and we realise that we clearly would need to do better.
Okay, well, Warren, I think that you put that very well, and I'd say there's a lot of people in associations as well that would agree with you, but hopefully, and as Azeem said himself today, that he wants to make a difference, and no doubt he definitely has. Warren, thank you so much for joining us. You said you had a busy period over the last few weeks. I've been looking at the schedule for the Ireland cricket teams over the next few months, and you have an even busier time ahead, so we wish you all the best with that. Thank you so much for joining us, David Snaid. We are very nearly out of time. Just very quickly, give us very quickly now a roundup of where the League of Ireland is at. I know it's finishing very, very soon, but what are the big games that are coming up that mean something?
Yeah, so it finishes on Friday. And I suppose, well, at the bottom end, Finn Harps have their destiny in their own hands after Waterford somehow managed to go four games without a win. So Finn Harps beat Longford on Friday. They are out of the relegation playoff. They're already out there now at the moment, so they just have to win to make sure they survive. And ahead of the cup final next Sunday, you're going to see, well, who'll finish fourth. It won't guarantee a place in the conference, but depending on who wins the cup, Bowes are there at the moment. But then there's a very, very intriguing game, Derry City against Dundalk. A couple of Dundalk players will be joining Derry City. There's a bit of needle there between the managers, so that'll be a good game to look out for on Friday, Derry and Dundalk too.
Well, my kids have insisted that I bring them to Talla on Friday night to see Shamrock Rovers crown champions, and they have tickets for the South Stand, and they're looking forward to that one. Okay, that is all we have time for. We'll be back tomorrow. Katie McCabe is starting for Arsenal tonight in the Champions League. For anyone that is interested, we'll be building up to those crucial women's games next week. David Snaid, thank you so much. Tara Kumar is up next.
Green Fern, have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.